listening to The Morning Magazine for Monday, September 20th. I'm Alexis Kenyon, in for Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, E-Town Hall is hosting a City Council candidate forum tonight, focusing on the arts. We'll hear about new census findings on poverty, and the CityCast Denver crew looks at why conservative-leaning Douglas County is breaking up with the Tri-County Health Department. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the BBC headlines, and then it's Black Talk. Host Michelle Simpson speaks with Pedro Silva, associate pastor for the First Congregational Church in Boulder, about being a Black pastor in a predominantly white congregation. As always on Monday morning, it's Counterspin at 9 a.m., a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. But first, these headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
Today, authorities in Colorado will open new sites for mass vaccinations against COVID-19 as mandates by employers start this fall requiring employees to show proof they've received shots. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment said there will be four locations which will be able to handle as many as 1,000 doses of vaccine each day. The sites will be at the Aurora Municipal Center, the Southwest Plaza Mall in Littleton, Dick's Sporting Goods Park in Commerce City, and the Chapel Hills Mall in Colorado Springs. The sites will be open 7 days a week through September 30th, and appointments are not required. Dr. John Samet of the Colorado School of Public Health told KDVR that the epidemic has been worsening in the state since July. Some experts are saying the state is in the middle of a fifth wave of hospitalizations. The reasons for the increase include unvaccinated people, kids being back in school, people going about their regular activities, and mask policies that differ around the state. Health officials in Jefferson County have sued three Christian schools, asking a judge to order them to comply with COVID-19 mask mandates. The Jefferson County Public Health Department sued Beth Eden Baptist School, Augustine Classical Academy, and Faith Christian Academy, claiming that they are not enforcing the county's mask requirement and that each of them refused to let some inspectors into their schools. The Denver Post reports that county officials say they had noticed three classes of 30 to 40 students who were all unmasked at one of the schools, as well as unmasked teachers and administrators. When the health officials sought to conduct follow-up visits, the school would not let them inside. A hearing in the case is scheduled for tomorrow. The University of Colorado in Boulder has seen a return to enrollment levels before the pandemic began. The Daily Camera reports that more undergraduates, graduates, and transfer students enrolled this fall. Nearly 36,000 students have registered, about 1,000 more than fall last year and in 2019. A spokesperson said in a statement that a return to pre-pandemic enrollment means the university will have greater stability of resources to invest in students' classroom experience and campus life. Colorado's air quality regulators voted on Friday to move forward with a controversial rule aimed at curbing greenhouse gas emissions for oil and gas operators. However, the rule has been met with opposition from environmental groups and local government officials. The Colorado Sun reports that the proposed rule would limit emissions based upon the amount of oil and gas that a company produces, with larger operators more restricted than smaller ones. Instead, several people who offered comments said that the commission should use direct regulations that would reduce emissions in the short term. Matt Jones, a Boulder County commissioner, told the Air Quality Control Commission that its approach was unproven, inaccurate, and costly. He also criticized the 2 years it will take to implement the rule. A staff member of the agency told the commission that the proposed intensity rule is only one part of a package that would tighten allowable emissions during well maintenance and controls on pipeline equipment. The agency will set a hearing in December on the proposed intensity rule. At a ceremony on Saturday at the Longmont Museum, the Northern Arapaho Tribe was recognized as the city's newest sister city. The Times Call reports that it is the first time in U.S. history that a relationship between a sovereign tribal nation and a city has been entered. Lee Spoonhunter, a co-chair of the tribe, told his fellow Arapahos that they are home, after which the crowd erupted with a burst of applause. The Northern Arapaho have made their ancestral home here in Colorado, but a treaty in the 1860s led to the tribe being forced onto the Wind River Reservation in Wyoming. Longmont Mayor Brian Bagley acknowledged that his city sits on traditional territory, not only of the Arapaho, but also the Cheyenne, Ute, and other indigenous people. On Friday, the Denver School Board censured Tay Anderson, one of its members, during a special meeting after a report was released about his alleged misconduct. While the investigation did not substantiate claims of sexual assault by Anderson, it did find that he engaged flirtatiously with a 16-year-old DPS student and made social media posts that could be seen as attempts to intimidate witnesses in the investigation. Colorado Politics reports that the censure was the only punishment the board could impose. The board's vote was 6-1, with Anderson the only no vote. The Bureau of Land Management will no longer be headquartered in Grand Junction. On Friday, Deb Haaland, the U.S. Secretary of Interior, announced that the agency's main office will return to Washington, D.C. Former President Donald Trump had moved the BLM to Colorado's West Slope. Now the agency will maintain its office there and expand its presence in western Colorado. The Denver Post reports the decision comes despite the efforts of politicians in the state who had lobbied to keep the headquarters in Colorado, where about 36% of the land is managed by the federal government. In today's weather, it will be mostly sunny with highs around 70. Tomorrow will be about the same as today. And Wednesday, it'll be sunny with highs in the low 80s. Right now, it's about 54 along the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
Listening to the Morning Magazine on KGNU. Election season is here, and it's time to get up to speed on candidates and issues. The Boulder County Arts Alliance will be hosting a City Council Candidates Forum at E-Town. KGNU's Shannon Young got the details from Jan Burton of the Create Boulder Foundation.
We are sponsoring this candidate forum along with the Boulder County Arts Alliance, and that's bouldercountyarts.org. Create Boulder is a new organization that kind of was sprung out of COVID-19 to assist struggling arts and cultural organizations that had impacts from COVID. And we delivered more than $400,000 in funding to Boulder arts and cultural organizations, including KGNU. And we want to work with the city of Boulder to ensure stable and increasing arts funding. So that's why we and the Boulder County Arts Association are putting special emphasis on this special candidate forum for the arts.
And where will the forum be and at what time, and how can people join if they can't be there in person?
Yes, the forum will be held at E-Town Hall, although it will also be live streamed. So if someone registers, then they can either attend live, I think that the first 125 people who come, or they can attend online. And that, if they register, that information will be provided to them.
And what protocols are in place for the in-person event?
Of course, masks will be required. And I don't believe that vaccination status will be checked, but masks will be required and only 125 people will be allowed in. So it will be a very safe event. And we do plan on having 10 of the city council candidates in attendance. So it should be a very good event.
You touched on this earlier with a response earlier, but why focus specifically on the arts in this candidate forum?
Well, we know that the arts contribute greatly to the community in terms of diversity, inclusion. For example, when you look at the Modus Theater production about Boundless Truth, Women's Stories of Freedom and Incarceration, this is representative of what happens with the arts in this community. In addition, the arts bring economic vitality. So the arts are very critical to this community. And recent council decisions call in doubt their commitment to the value of the arts. So we recently, Create Boulder, met with Nuria Vanderbrand, the new city manager. She is very committed to the arts. We want to hear how the city council candidates feel about the arts and what their commitment is. And as you may know, we have 5 new council members coming in. So in addition to the 3 council members who are committed to the arts, we have a chance of really changing the game in terms of potential funding and more commitment to arts and culture in this community.
And just to give us an idea of the scope of the purse strings that are held by City Council, approximately how much funding are they able to determine in any given fiscal year for the arts?
Well, the total budget for 2022 that has been submitted is something like, hold on, let me check, $462.5 million. And yeah, it's a lot of money.
For the arts? And
No. $462 million in total. Now listen to this. When you look at the total of open space and parks and rec, the budget is almost $60 million. And only $1.5 million goes to the arts. So you can see the huge disparity of funding for different kinds of, let's say, health and wellness and opportunities for residents and visitors to the city of Boulder. That's why we think there's work to be done around the arts.
And again, that candidate forum that is occurring is happening tonight at E-Town, 1535 Spruce Street. Doors open at 5:30. Masks are required. Jan Burton, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Yes, I'd like to say if you want to register, you would go to bouldercountyarts.org and you'll see the registration information there. And if you want more information about Create Boulder, that would be createboulder.org. We hope to welcome many of you. Since you don't have to attend personally, feel free to register for the event and you'll be able to attend live stream, or you will get a recorded version as well. So we hope to see many, many of your listeners in attendance.
Jan Burton is board chair of the Create Boulder Foundation. Thanks for speaking with me today.
Thank you very much.
And you are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU.
The census recently released its findings on poverty and income statistics. It found the pandemic's economic effects hit some harder than others, with an overall 12% decrease in full-time jobs. 54% of the jobs lost belonged to low-wage workers. Trudy Renwick studies housing and economics for the U.S. Census Bureau. She says despite record levels of unemployment nationwide last year, the top half of U.S. earners made even more money.
Real median earnings of those who worked full-time year-round increased 6.9%. Many of the full-time year-round jobs that were lost were at the lower end of the income distribution.
Women and people of color make up a disproportionate amount of low-wage workers. In 2020, women earned about 80% of what men made. As men's median income stayed the same during the pandemic at around $60,000 a year, women's income fell to just over $50,000. When comparing single-parent households, male versus female income disparities grew. For 2020, about 24% of female-led households found themselves below the poverty line, compared to fewer than 5% of male-led households. Government benefits, however, did help keep about 11 million workers out of poverty. And for people of color who experienced disproportionate job loss, poverty rates actually decreased in 2020 because of expanded government aid. Again, Trudy Renwick.
This really shows the importance of the social safety net, right? When we see differences in trends with the official poverty rate, that's really the impact of our tax system. That's the impact of our non-cash benefits. So I think this really highlights the importance of our social safety net.
As the pandemic benefits end, the Census Bureau experts predict poverty rates will likely increase in coming months. For KGNU, I'm Alexis Kenyon. One of the worst natural disasters in Denver's history, the 1965 South Platte River floods, led Douglas County to join the Tri-County Health Department. Since then, DUGCO has provided residents with crucial public health services ranging from syringe disposal to restaurant health inspections. Now, 55 years and one global pandemic later, their relationship has come to an end. For more on the breakup, CityCast Denver host Bree Davies spoke with Elliot Wensler, who covers DUGCO for Colorado Community Media.
Well, Elliot Wensler, welcome to CityCast Denver.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on.
So we're going to talk about Douglas County. And I think to start, there's things that people maybe don't know about Douglas County that makes it different from other counties, if you don't live there or you're not involved in the politics. So I know you've been covering Douglas County for Colorado Community Media for a couple of years now. And I just want to get into, like, where is Douglas County, and sort of what are the demographics or who lives there?
Yeah, so Douglas County is kind of a mixed suburban rural county south of Denver. So it's just below Arapahoe County. It starts with like Highlands Ranch, Lone Tree, Parker, those areas, and then goes down into Castle Rock. And then there's also a giant, you know, rural area within the county that goes all the way down to the border with El Paso. You know, it's kind of a county that the demographics are, we're starting to see them sort of change. We definitely see, you know, based on elections, that it is still a very conservative county. We have started to see some of those margins change in recent elections, just getting the tiniest bit smaller, the tiniest bit more purple. So it's a community that we're starting to see impacted by the growth of the Denver area as a whole, but still very conservative.
And the reason I wanted to sort of set this up this way is because there's this bigger story that we're going to talk about right now, which is these tensions between Douglas County and the Tri-County Health Department. And in recent weeks, it sort of reached a boiling point. And now Douglas County has decided to break away from the Tri-County Health Department. Can you explain what exactly is going on there?
This is something that's been kind of brewing for a while now, throughout the pandemic mostly. So back in March, when the pandemic really started, March of 2020, Tri-County Health Department, which serves Adams, Arapahoe, and Douglas County, they put out a stay-at-home order, you know, similar to the ones we saw throughout many areas at that time. When they did that, several state legislators representing Douglas County sent a letter to the commissioners of Douglas County saying, we think you should leave this health department, because the commissioners had kind of had this disagreement about if that measure was necessary. They felt like they didn't have time to really get on board. And the legislators said, well, then if they're not listening to the elected officials, then you just shouldn't be a part of that district. So that's kind of where things all started, with this conflict between local control and health departments having, you know, their legal ability to do what they believe is necessary to maintain public health.
Neville and other Republican leaders suggested today that Douglas County should cut ties with its health department, Tri-County Health Department, so that Douglas County would not have to listen to the health experts there who are calling for a local stay-home order. Our Steve Steger looks at the policy.
Right. So after those state legislators sent that letter, we didn't really hear much about this issue until July, when Tri-County put another public health order in place. This time it was a mask mandate for indoor spaces. And just after that is when the commissioners sent a notice to Tri-County saying, we will be leaving the health department in a year, which is a statutorily required notice. You're required to let them know a year in advance.
Okay.
It was a couple months later we learned that Tri-County and Douglas County were actually in negotiations trying to find a way that they could remain together beyond that year advance that they'd given. And so the terms that they came to were that Douglas County said they would stay with the health department until at least January 2023. And Tri-County said they would allow each county that they represent, the commissioners, to opt out of any public health order moving forward. And so that was sort of the agreement between those two entities. And that was in the fall of 2020 is when they came to that agreement, and Douglas County said, yeah, we're sticking around for a little bit longer.
So the Tri-County Health Department could make a health mandate, but then Douglas County could choose to opt out of that.
Right. I do think it's important to note that at that time, a lot of the mandates, I think, you know, most of them were being put in place at the state level. So Douglas County was still being required to follow various mandates, but it was coming from the state level rather than Tri-County. It's only since the governor devolved those different decisions to the local level that we've started to really see those tensions kind of ignite again.
So speaking of that, do you, in the reporting that you just done in general about Douglas County, do you have a sense of public opinion on this conflict, or where folks who live in Douglas County stand on the issue?
Yeah, so that's always kind of a tricky thing, because I think a lot of the time we hear, obviously, from some of the loudest voices. So coming into a lot of the meetings around this, we hear public speakers who have, you know, really cheered the commissioners on. There have been several meetings where that's been the majority of those who speak to the commissioners during public comment.
To the people screaming for medical fascism, which is what this is, please at least consider this. If our country goes in this direction, there will come a time that you will have a medical decision imposed on you or your children that you don't agree with. If you give up my right to waive...
But then we also hear the other side of it. And there was an official poll that was done by the commissioners at one point that asked about this issue. That survey showed that 60% of the respondents said they felt like it was a, quote, good idea for the county to be a part of Tri-County Health. So we kind of have two different things that we're seeing, from public meetings to this scientifically conducted survey. But commissioners responded to that survey saying they kind of felt like residents weren't necessarily well informed on the issue, and so that maybe that's why a reason that folks responded the way that they did.
So you said a minute ago that Douglas County and Tri-County Health had reached this deal last year where Douglas County would stick around in exchange for Tri-County Health allowing them to opt out of any public health order. Then over the summer, the Delta variant started spreading, schools were getting ready to reopen, and we started seeing debates over mask mandates all over the country. What happened that made all this reignite in Douglas County?
Yes. So all that changed with the most recent round of mask mandates coming down from Tri-County Health Department. So they initially put in place a mask mandate for students ages 2 through 11, but it still allowed for that availability for counties to opt out of it. So after they decided on that, the Douglas County commissioners voted to do so. They voted to opt out. So Tri-County called another meeting and said, let's reconsider that mask mandate and let's reconsider the availability of opting out. In that meeting, they decided to no longer allow opt-outs, basically saying this has prevented us from providing our statutorily required duties, and they put in place a more sweeping mask mandate for all students and teachers in schools inside. So it was after they did that that the county commissioner said, well, we're no longer allowed to opt out. That was our earlier agreed upon provision for staying with Tri-County. Therefore, we are going to be pulling out.
Small. And in a lot of ways, Douglas County is just too big to be small. We joined Tri-County when we were 4,000 people with 357,000. This isn't a divorce from Tri-County Health. It's just an empty nest. And that's okay. It's okay
so
for kids to
what happened is they voted to create a Douglas County Health Department. That health department is now in existence. That Board of Health will be able to meet and decide if they want to put any public health orders in place. If they don't want to, they will also select a public health executive director for their new department. So those are some of the things that the, you know, average resident can expect to look for, because it's hard to say what's really going to happen until that Board of Health has an opportunity to meet and make these decisions.
Thinking about, again, Douglas County as a more conservative county, having its own health department, is this going to require more taxes, or is this going to be a more lax approach to COVID? Like, what do you predict or see for the future of this new health department?
So the question about taxes has been a really, really big question on a lot of people's minds and on the minds of county staff and commissioners as well, because folks keep asking, is this going to require an increase in taxes? How on earth are we going to pay for this department? And, you know, the answer that I've gotten when I've asked the county about this is we're still trying to find out exactly how much this is going to cost and how we're going to pay for it. They're really hoping to use, federal and state dollars on this and not, you know, one commissioner said he really thinks that it's not the plan to raise taxes, but we just don't know yet. And they don't know yet what this is going to cost or how it's going to be paid for. As far as COVID measures go, I mean, that one is really difficult to answer, not knowing how the pandemic is going to go, not knowing who is going to be the public health director or what the dynamic of this specific board of health will be like. That one is just really hard to know what's going to happen there.
Kind of remains to be seen.
Definitely.
What the future will look like.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess finally, so Tri-County Health is now dual county health. It's just left to Adams and Arapahoe counties. Have they said anything about what the future is for Tri-County Health, or if they are going to split off and create their own, or what's next for that?
Yeah, so my colleague Ellis Arnold reported on that just after we found out that Douglas County was going to be leaving, and he learned that Adams and Arapahoe are both considering splitting from Tri-County as well, sort of spurred by this decision from the Douglas County commissioners. So really the whole fate of Tri-County is kind of up in the air right now. We don't know if it's going to be unicounty or dual county, or just, I know that the name is not the most important thing, but I'm very curious about what the name will turn into. And we just don't know.
What a wild thing to be going through in the middle of a public health crisis.
Right.
Well, Elliot, thank you so much for talking with me today and sort of parsing out this really complicated issue.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on.
You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver daily news podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
And that does it for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Alexis Kenyon. Special thanks to volunteer headlines producer Jamie Sudler and to Evan Perkins for technical assistance. Stay tuned for Black Talk with Michelle Simpson. That's after a news update from the BBC.